We all do get our food from grocery stores, and we all take that food for granted. Even those fresh tomatoes we eat in the middle of winter. It's time to take some time to meet the people who provide us with all the food we take for granted. We'll ask, how do you provide us with all our food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1340th edition of the Food Chain Radio Podcast. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome to the fourth and final segment of our serendipitous stroll through the World Ag Expo in Tulare, California. What we have before us to explore is over 1,200 exhibitors displaying their goods and services on about 2.6 million square feet of exhibit space. Hope you all brought some good strolling shoes because we got some walking to do. Oh, and we'll get to bump butts with over 108,000 other visitors from 56 countries. Well, so without further ado, since we have a lot of people to meet today, we're just going to take off and see what we see. Well, the first thing we see is a sign that says Fog Co. Fog Co. in Tulare? Ladies and gentlemen, if you've never been caught in the Tule fog of Tulare County on I-5 or 99 or something, you're in for a surprise. Because this fog is so thick, you can drown in it. At least you can get in some pretty terrific car accidents, and a lot of people do. So why would somebody be selling fog in Tulare County, California? So let's pause and give them a listen and see what they have to sell us.
Sure, my name's Dana Pack. I'm with Fog Co.
Fog Co?
Yes, sir, Fog Co. F-O-G-C-O.
What do you do with fog?
So we use a high-pressure delivery system. We use that for a variety of industries as well as a variety of applications. We do humidification with the fog. We do cooling. We do special effects that you see at theme parks and stuff like that. But we also do a lot of odor control as well.
And agriculture does need odor control, especially here in Tulare County.
Correct. It depends on where they're located, if it's within requirements, and where there's those requirements and permits or what have you, that's where we provide solutions for those particular industries.
So somebody has a farm pretty close to a city. They probably have to figure out how to mitigate the odor then.
They, for being a good neighbor, yes. The have-to part comes in where the compliance and ordinances are in place, and if that's the case, we always are able to help with a solution for that particular business.
You know, some time ago I had the opportunity to give us a three-day seminar on marketing to a bunch of independent dairy farmers in Drummondville, Quebec. Spent 3 days with them, a lot of fun. But they're trying to figure out how to compete with the industrialization of dairy farms that was going on at the time in the United States, wherein cows were being moved off the green grass in places like the Midwest, Wisconsin, and whatnot, and moved to the desert of California. Why would a dairy farm want to locate where there's no green grass? Well, because the effluent from so many cattle and cows packaged into such tiny confinement facilities was almost impossible to manage where the rains fall. And so it was much more convenient to move all these critters to Tulare County, California. 1 in 5 dairy cows in the United States of America now lives in California, and where there's not much green grass for them to enjoy, but that's where the action is for them. So there you go. So another interesting sign said control of pigs. They're saying that they can control feral hogs. And I didn't know anybody who would fess up to that. So let's give them a listen, see what they have to say.
My name is Henry Brower from Central California, and our company is called Soil and Crop, and one of our products is deer and pig repellent, and we use the biologicals for the trees and fruit, and that's what we do.
So what kind of biologicals repel hogs, wild hogs?
Well, I misspoke. Our biologicals are for our trees for fertilizing, and for our hogs, we use a product called Pinergetic, which repels the animals.
So are these products available for people who live in and around cities too?
Yes, we are geared more towards the farmer, but we're working on smaller acreage size packages.
Good. How do people find you?
We can go to our website, Soil and Crop, callnrg.com. Yes.
NRG.com.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know. Pinergetics, what could possibly repel an extended family of ravenous hogs? The only thing I can think of is not chemical in nature. That's a lot of hunger there to go after. And I don't know if it's possible to do it with some kind of foul-smelling stuff. At any rate, hogs are a huge problem in California and throughout the United States. What to do about them? Going to be a tough problem that's getting tougher and tougher and tougher as the herds expand. What are we going to do? Don't really know. But that is an issue, and that's why the sign caught my attention. So, as a student of English and Chinese literature, I have to confess to being affected by some of the books I have read throughout my life, as I'm sure you have. One such very early read was a book by Pearl Buck entitled The Good Earth. And I guess what touched me about the story of the Chinese peasants and their relationship with the land, it reminded me so much of my life on my grandparents' farm near the village of Belfry, Montana. It's pretty much the same kind of thing, same kind of existence back then. Life on the farm was life on the farm, right? Later, I would learn an apt expression for the sentiment, which is dajia do yong, which translated to all are equal. All the big family is equal. And when it comes to the land, all people are equal in need, though we city people more often than not reject that thought because we live on the cement and concrete. And speaking of good earth, a display of magazines with a photo of a pretty girl caught my attention with the title of Range Writer. Now, what was really amazing about this booth was the number of people that were flocking around it. And so whenever there's bumping butts, you always got to figure out why the butts are bumping. And so I went over to check it out, and I asked the first person I met, what the heck's going on here? And she said, what did she say?
Hi, my name is Elisa. I work for a Knipe Land Company out of Boise, Idaho. We're licensed in 7 states over the Northwest, and we put out a magazine called The Range Writer. And it's a magazine that has pictures of all of our listings throughout the Northwest and also photos of lovely scenery and rodeo queens that we sponsor in each state. And here at the World Ag, we've got Miss Rodeo California, Mackenzie Middleton, and we put her on the cover so she could sign autographs and get pictures.
Well, you know, evidently the picture was attracting a lot of attention because there were a lot of people buzzing around the booth. You know, having been raised in the rodeo culture of Montana, thanks to my Uncle Walt Linderman of the Red Lodge Lindermans, I am pretty well acquainted with the ideological debate between animal rights activists and those who live on the land and work with their animals. One side of this debate demands that animals be treated humanely, which I think has come to mean that they should be treated like human beings. The other team believes that people should take dominion over their animals, which in the words of Dr. Temple Grandin means we are to take responsibility for their welfare. Though Uncle Walt's horse, Scotty, was not treated as if he were a human, he was a rodeo horse, and a rodeo champion at that. And in fact, Scotty is now enshrined in the Rodeo Hall of Fame as one of the true greats of the radio horse world. I wonder what would happen to animals if the animal rights activists win this ideological debate and people are no longer allowed to take dominion over their animals. Let's hear what the rodeo queen, Melissa Middleton, has to say about that.
Hello, my name is Mackenzie Middleton, and I'm Miss Rodeo California 2023.
Okay. Do you participate in rodeos?
I am trying my hand at breakaway roping, but as a rodeo queen, you're ambassador for the sport of rodeo, so I get to represent the sport of rodeo and cowboy culture for the entire state of California.
What do you say to those people who say rodeos are cruel to animals?
I say that you just need to learn more and come to a rodeo. Ask a rodeo queen if you are willing to learn, because there's so much in rodeo that actually protects animals and celebrates animals. We have so many animals in our own Hall of Fame, so it's honestly just a huge misunderstanding, and I'd love to correct that.
And I'm sure she would. So, as I said, this booth was very busy, a lot of people nosing around, and let's meet the guy responsible for it.
Hello, my name is Mackenzie.
Oops, that's not the one. This is the one.
My name is John Knipe. I'm a farm and ranch broker in seven states, based out of Idaho. And we're here at the Ag Expo. We love coming to this show. We wouldn't miss it ever. It's amazing.
You sponsor Miss Rodeos?
We do. Different state rodeo queens, like Miss Rodeo California, we sponsor. Mm-hmm. We bring them to the shows, and we put them on the cover of our magazine. And people love it. They love it, and we love being here. We love being in California, and we love being at this show. We really wouldn't ever miss a show. It's been that powerful for our business to be here.
How is the business for farm and ranch land? Are the prices going up, or are they going down?
Prices seem to still be going up. There's very little inventory, but at the same time, there's a strong, strong demand for farm and ranch. There's a lot of buyers out there looking to place their money in farm and ranch real estate. And a lot of sellers are reluctant to sell, because if they sell, what are they going to go buy if there's a limited demand? So if we can get more on the market, I think you'll see even more activity.
Well, that's for certain. As we all know, those of us at least who pay attention, a lot of America's ag land is being purchased in huge chunks by big people with a lot of money, like Bill Gates. And even the Chinese are coming to town and buying up our farmland. So what's going to happen, I wonder, when they own all the farmland? Who then will be the next farmers? Well, where are they going to get the land? That's just an interesting question that we should all bear in mind as we think about land and its importance. And speaking of land, wait till you hear what John Knight has to say about California farmland. But you got to stay tuned, because we will be right back. Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for the last of our four-part serendipitous stroll through the world of agriculture by virtue of the World Ag Expo in Tulare, California. And boy, you and I could spend, I think, $100 million walking around this place in one day. There's a lot of really fancy equipment and a lot of big-ticket items that are just blow you away. And, of course, one of them is the land that is being offered for sale by the Knipe Land Company. And having been attracted to his booth by the hubbub of bumping butts and wondering what's going on, I actually got a pretty interesting piece of story from him. And it relates to California and what is really happening to our great state of California. Now, let's give John a listen and parse what he has to say here. because it really is kind of amazing.
My name is John Knipe. I'm a farm and ranch broker in seven states based out of Idaho. And we're here at the Ag Expo. We love coming to this show. We wouldn't miss it ever. It's amazing.
And you sponsor Miss Rodeos?
Yep, we do. Different state rodeo queens like Miss Rodeo California we sponsor. Mm-hmm. We bring them to the shows and we put them on the cover of our magazine. And people love it. They love it. And we love being here. We love being in California and we love being at this show. We really wouldn't ever miss a show.
And there's a reason why he doesn't want to miss this show. Listen.
There's a tremendous amount of people that come to this show, and that's a great opportunity for us. And if we pick up one person that comes to Idaho, for instance, which we've done, he's bought 36 farms in Idaho from us. Every time he sells a farm in the Central Valley, he moves his money through a 1031 exchange to Idaho. His brother's doing the same thing now, and his mother's doing the same thing. And each time they sell a small farm here in the valley, they're moving the money to Idaho. We've done maybe 40 deals with three people, all from this one show.
Wow, it sounds like California's moving to Idaho.
It really is. Idaho is the fastest growing state in the nation right now. But we love coming to California, and the people are great.
With all those deals, I suspect he really does love coming to California. Wow. 40 deals. So the question is, what the heck is happening to California? Why would somebody sell some of the most productive farmland on earth in California's Great Central Valley and move to Idaho? Now, being a child of the Big Sky country of Montana, I know the allure of that country. But in terms of productivity, nothing can match that of California. So what is it happening in California that would have people give up their the most precious farmland in the world and run for the hills of Idaho? What's going on in California? Is the Golden State no longer the Golden State? Is that what's going on? It sure seems like that is what's going on. It's really a downright tragedy because it is the best place on earth to grow food. There it is. But that's a story and one well worth considering what happened to the great state of California. Well, folks, I have a story about kelp, which is kind of fun. Many years ago, I had a friend, Robin, from South Africa, who was a brilliant horticulturalist. So we had a lot of fun talking about growing plants and whatnot. One day, Robin called me up and asked for a ride downtown. So I said, well, sure, and I went to pick him up. And lo and behold, he had three cardboard boxes filled with kelp. Robin had drug kelp home from the beach, washed it, shredded it by hand, and dried it, and was going to take it to the farmer's market to sell it. And I thought, oh, goodness, why would anybody want to buy that? And so I took him down to the flea market in downtown, and he set up his three boxes of kelp, and I took off to run some errands. And when I came back, Robin was standing there, and all of his boxes were gone. And I said, Robin, did you sell your kelp? And he said, no, somebody stole my kelp. And I thought, well, there must be something of value to steal three boxes of kelp and haul them away. 10 years down the line, I went out and bought some kelp with some other people. There was a few of us, and we got together, and we bought a whole bunch of kelp, about 10 tons of it, for use in a fertilizer that we made let's see. I think I have the right one here. There we go. So with the fertilizer we made, and it was fertilizer for yuppies' house plants. It called Soil Essence. And of course, you know, like many startups, we had a tough time. especially back in those days when everybody thought anything that had anything to do with organic was crazy. So we moved on, but I'll tell you what, I am firmly convinced that kelp is a very good substance for people and plants. But remember, my introduction came from a friend from South America. So listen to this.
Hello, my name is Drake Salwasser. I work for AfriKelp in the Central Valley of California.
And what do you offer agriculture in the Central Valley?
Here at AfriKelp, we have a sustainably harvested kelp extract that's grown in the Western Cape of South Africa. And we use the extracts from the kelp to stimulate root growth in plants across the valley.
What kind of crops especially do well with kelp?
In the Central Valley specifically, we focus on many different crops, ranging from almonds and all nut crops, pistachios, citrus, table grapes. You know, we really run the gauntlet and focus on any kind of crop that needs additional quality parameters.
Good. Isn't it amazing that you can bring kelp from South Africa to the Central Valley of California and do it and make it work for crop farmers?
Yeah, that's one great thing about AfriKelp is we're able to bring our kelp over in a concentrated form and then reconstitute it here stateside, where we can then distribute it out to our growers in, you know, all over the United States.
You know, what really makes kelp magic, I think, is that it just hangs there in the seawater. And ladies and gentlemen, just about everything dissolves in the seawater. You could throw an old car in the sea and pretty soon it'll just be gone. So that kelp hangs there and absorbs all of its nutrients and nutrition from the seawater. And when we went to look at kelp, we learned that kelp from certain latitudes contains a whole spectrum of micronutrients that you typically don't find in commercial fertilizers. Most commercial fertilizers are NPK, and that's what you get, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. But there are so many other elements that are not in that fertilizer that are required for plant and people growth. And so when we used the used kelp, as we did, we found that it had a way of turning green plants into a deep, rich blue. And they put a wonderful shine on their leaves. And so I have a feeling it does the same thing for people, because we need all of those nutrients, and kelp is one place that we can get them. Just my thought. So, moving along, another sign catches our attention: Precision Ag Solutions. Well, that's pretty much on everybody's mind these days. And why is precision so important? Because agriculture is a very expensive industry these days. The industrialized agriculture costs a lot of money. And so when people spend a lot of money, they want to make sure they get as much as possible out of it. And precision agriculture encompasses the technology, technologies that allow agriculture to get the most out of everything that they invest. So when you drive through vegetable country these days, you see plants lined up in perfection, perfectly precise rows, perfectly spaced so as to give the plant maximum amount of sunshine. And that is the nature of precision agriculture. So let's meet a person from precision agriculture and see what he has to say about shaving. Shaving? Yes, shaving.
It's a precision farming company. We sell GPS. I'm Chris Gidman with Precision Ag Solutions. It's a precision farming company. We sell GPS equipment and rate controllers, and we specialize in custom designs for to fit the needs of growers.
We hear a lot about precision agriculture these days. How precise is precision agriculture these days?
Well, like this Weed It Spot Spray system, you know, we're able to save a grower anywhere from 50 to 90% on herbicide costs. So when we set up an orchard sprayer, we can usually get it paid for in a single season. The ROI is really fast on these.
How does it work?
Well, it sees the weeds and fires off independent nozzles. So we have our nozzle spacing anywhere from 5 to 10 inches apart, and then when the sensor sees a weed, it fires off whatever nozzle it needs to kill that weed. So instead of a traditional broadcast spray, we're targeting individual weeds.
How does it know the difference between a weed and a good plant?
So plants give off chlorophyll, and chlorophyll is reflectant, so it's really looking for that reflectant, and that's the what it's targeting.
Is it infrared?
It's not infrared, but it's a red light, and we also have a blue version, but it's a red light, and it's just using the reflectant.
What about GPS?
We sell a lot of GPS systems for steering. We do a lot of RTK steering systems for row crops. We use it on planters, corn planters, cotton planters, and even for rate control and mapping. And even in orchards, we use GPS for data logging and mapping.
How precise is GPS?
Sub 1 inch. Yeah, there's different levels of accuracy, but most of the stuff we're doing in the row crops would be sub-inch accuracy, repeatable to 1 inch.
Would you trust it to shave in the morning?
Yes, absolutely.
And there you are. That's precise. And precision agriculture is the nature of the technology now that's coming out of Silicon Valley and throughout, you know, percolating throughout agriculture, so as to allow the farmer to be as precise as possible when planting, when weeding. Think about that weeder that he was talking about. You pull it over your field, and it sees which weed, which plant is a weed, and which plant is a potential profitable crop. So it sees this, and it makes a decision that plant has to go. And so it points its little nozzle at it and sprays a squirt of herbicide, and poof, the plant is gone. Now, you know, if you back up a little while, you know, when I was a kid, I was a teenage herbicide myself. And my job is to go through the field with a sharp hoe and kill the weeds. I was expensive, and I was also pretty darn reluctant when it got right down to it. So along comes herbicides, where you could just spray the field and it kills all the weeds. Well, that gets pretty expensive. And it's, you know, a lot of people don't want to eat the food that comes from that kind of technology. So please find another way. So here's a precision herbicide applicator that recognizes the good plants from the bad plants and dispatches the bad plants. In a sense, you're saving a whole bunch of money on the herbicides and the time it takes to hoe those weeds, but I'll bet that machine costs money too. And when it gets right down to it, machines are as expensive as people because it takes people to work machines. Interesting note, when we meet the people from the big equipment companies like John Deere and Massey Ferguson, and we will be meeting them after we take this quick break, but there's a great story that goes along with equipment and the fix the equipment can put people in, and so we're going to stay tuned for that. This is the 1340th edition of the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this serendipitous stroll through the world of agriculture at Tulare County, California, which is the heart of America's dairy district. Hard to imagine where no green grass grows, the dairy industry thrives. But such is the nature of modern times. And that's where we live, is modern times. Once again, this is The Food Chain. We will be right back. We're going to meet the people of the farmers of, and farm farmers of color. I bet you've never thought of that one before, but sure enough, we're going to meet the farmers that recognize color and are obsessed in some cases with their color. This is The Food Chain radio program. Michael Olson, please do stay tuned. We will be right back after these very important messages. Welcome back. This is The Food Chain radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. I did promise to introduce you to the people of color in agriculture. Why? Well, we're all pretty sensitive about color these days, but people in farming have been sensitive about color for a long time because color represents the brands of their tractors and their implements. So if you see the neighbor with a particular color, you know what kind of person he is. And so to introduce that notion, I think we ought to start this color by meeting the people of the orange.
Hi, I'm Steve Joyce with Kubota Tractor. I'm an ag product specialist, and we're here at the Farm Show, the World Ag Expo.
Well, here, let me ask you a very important question, and that is, what's your favorite color?
That's a hard one. Probably orange.
So when people are driving by the countryside and they look out and they see a tractor that's orange, what does that tell them?
There's quality, there's perseverance, and there's a large organization behind them.
Kubota came to the United States, I don't know, maybe 40, 50 years ago, something like 40 years ago, I guess.
We just celebrated our 50th anniversary in 2022 in the United States.
In the United States. Well, I was a decade off then. And what they did was they brought small tractors designed for people who had smaller parcels of land.
That is true. Yes, for smaller parcels and also to fit the small market for, like, per se, strawberries and the small row crop business.
And because you had that incredible niche that nobody was really paying all that much attention to,
we fit that niche, like you were saying, but we also succeeded in the specialty market.
When you say specialty market, folks go, what is that?
Specialty crops, which is getting more and more important as time goes through, would be your vineyards, orchards, small row crop, organics, you name it. There's all kinds of specialty crops.
Kind of anything that's not a commodity.
Small crops could be a commodity.
That's right.
And no, it's not so much a niche market because as people, we like variety of foods. Okay, we don't just survive on corn and soybeans or rice, which are the three main crops. Well, then you also have a lot of your smaller, like wheats and grasses and stuff that take wild rice, for instance.
There you go. And as Kubota has been so good at satisfying the needs of the farmers in those markets, it's been able to expand quite a bit around the world.
It has gone around the world, and also Kubota has acquired other companies, per se like Land Pride, which gives us an implement to go along with our tractors. Tractor doesn't do you a whole lot of good if it doesn't have something to pull.
Right. Now, where do you see the world going for specialty crops? You said it's becoming increasingly more important. Do you see that growing and growing and growing?
I think as food supplies around the world, people are wanting to have better quality coming closer to home, being local market. And so, yes, Kubota is part of that world.
Should we invest in Kubota?
If you got money thrown in the stock market.
Kubota tractor. Okay, so let's move on and talk about the Red People.
My name is Ryan Miller. I'm the regional sales director for Case IH.
Good. Ryan, what's your favorite color?
Clearly red. Case IH red.
So when people are driving across the countryside and they see red out there, what does that mean?
Well, they will recognize red in the industry for Case IH or International Harvester or Case.
Okay. International Harvester goes, that's a name that goes way back there.
Absolutely. I don't know what the original dates. Okay, you might help me with that.
Well, those aren't important, but now it's Case IH.
So, yeah, we're a little bit of, we're several companies brought together today. We started with Case, with Jerome Increase Case in the Racine, Wisconsin area. International Harvester, so the two companies formed to merge and create Case IH today. And so that's really where our lineage comes from, and that's where the red color comes from.
Good. And what exactly do you help farmers with? I see a Farmall sign. Is that part of you?
You bet. Farmall is, again, an original 100-year anniversary of Farmall, actually, this year. That is an International Harvester brand. We keep it today, and a lot of our products that we have are, you know, proud of their lineage and where they came from with the Steiger four-wheel drive tractors, with the Magnum series tractor, the Axial Flow Combine, the Patriot series sprayer. A lot of our products, we carry those brands forward into today for our customers.
So you're one of the full-line manufacturers then, so pretty much whatever farmers need, you're there.
We have a full line, yeah, absolutely, from, you know, low horsepower, small farms, tractors, to all the way to the largest four-wheel drive tractors, the Steiger tractor, up to 699 horsepower today, with our new 645 Steiger that was just launched at the show today, and also at National Farm Machinery Show. Tomorrow was launched, or will be launched on Wednesday. So, yeah, we have a full gamut.
Good. Well, I got to tell you, Farmall was the first tractor I ever drove on my grandparents' farm. 6 years old. Never forget it.
Absolutely. I think many of us have. And, you know, that's, if you look around the Case IH booth, you'll see we have the Built by Farmers campaign. Many of us in our company are either from a farm or we currently are still on a farm, including myself. So I grew up on a farm and I still farm today.
Good. What color?
Red, of course.
Oh, but red's not the only color. There's also blue. And when I came upon the blue tractors, I was reminded of seeing a blue whale in the waters of the Monterey Bay area. That whale, I think it was a little tiny fishing boat, and this blue, giant blue whale came up and opened its mouth and kind of yawned and closed its mouth and sank back into the water. And I thought, oh, what an extraordinary animal. And I saw a machine at the folks that sell blue tractors, and I thought, that reminds me of that blue whale. So let's meet the folks of the blue tractors.
I am Tanner Cady. I am the product manager for specialty equipment for New Holland.
New Holland. Now, Tanner, what is your favorite color?
My favorite color? Blue.
Blue. So when folks see a blue tractor implement out in the field, what does that mean?
It means it's a New Holland piece of equipment.
Okay. You have lots of different equipment, don't you?
We do. Yes, we do. We're standing right here by our 11.90X multi-harvester. It's targeted towards super high-density orchard plantings.
My God, folks, it looks like a whale's mouth.
It does, it does. It's much wider, and it's a little bit taller than our previous model of tree harvesters, so this is going to be a new launch for us. Not only does it harvest our current trees more efficiently, but can handle a tree that's slightly larger.
So tell us how it walks through it. So it has an opening,
yep,
kind of a V-shaped opening, so it kind of funnels in the trees.
Yes, and that's actually a really good way of describing it. So the way the tree comes in is we're pinching the tree in between our bow rods that you see here. Mm-hmm. It shakes the tree back and forth.
Rattle, and all, rattle, rattle.
Yep, and the fruit falls into our Noria buckets. Okay, so a completely different design from what you've seen from our other competitors. Fruit falls into the buckets, goes up the back of the machine, onto a conveyor belt, and that conveyor belt passes right underneath a fan. So the fan pulls out any leaves, wood. I like to refer to it as mog, material other than grape. In this case, it could be material other than olives or almonds, citrus, you know, whatever it may be. And that fan pulls all that out, and then you can either put it into a gondola pulled by a tractor, or you could put it into the hopper.
Now, do you think there will no longer be a need for farm workers in the near future?
I wouldn't say it's in the near future, but I'd say it's in the future.
Okay. Well, this is one amazing machine. Harvests tree fruits, tree nuts.
Yep.
Amazing.
And it was amazing that you could actually design and put together and sell a machine that picks tree fruit and tree nuts instead of people. And I guess that's one of the overwhelming lessons that I learned from this Ag Expo. And I will pick up the other one toward the end of the show here. But first, I'd like to move along because I ran into something at the Ag Show that stopped me in my tracks. Why did it stop me in my tracks? Well, because I'm a pilot.
My name is Ken Goble. I'm the regional sales director for Cirrus Aircraft.
Cirrus Aircraft? But we're at the World Ag Expo.
Yes, that's right. And so we've actually been coming here to the World Ag Expo for about 12 years. And it's been a very good show for us. It's amazing how many people that are in agriculture are pilots or have a need to fly to either get from one farm to another farm, or even we have a lot of vendors that are here selling their products, and they need to travel to visit people that are in agriculture, and they use the airplane to do that transportation. It's very efficient.
How efficient is, we're looking at a single-engined aircraft here. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, this is Cirrus Aircraft. We're actually headquartered and manufactured in Duluth, Minnesota. We've been the best-selling single-engine airplane for the last 21 years in a row. We're very blessed with that. The airplane's an extremely efficient aircraft. It's very state-of-the-art. It's designed to feel much more like an automobile on the inside. Big oversized windows. But the thing that really sets Cirrus Aircraft apart from other aircraft is that we have a built-in parachute. So that if something goes wrong, which is very unlikely, but if it does, we can actually pull a handle that will deploy a parachute that will bring the airplane with everybody inside down safely.
Take your family home safely.
Exactly right. Yeah, which is one of the biggest selling features in our airplane. That's standard equipment on our aircraft and made us a very popular airplane. We also have very state-of-the-art avionics in the aircraft made by Garmin, made specifically for our brand. Garmin's a very popular manufacturer of GPS equipment in automobiles and boats, marine, and in aviation. It's been used in other types of airplanes, but we have a very unique system that's specialized to our aircraft. Made and designed between Cirrus and Garmin.
A lot of the farmers in our Monterey Bay Area do a lot of traveling from Monterey Bay Area down to the Imperial Valley and even into Mexico. So something like this could, you know, I know they go through a lot to get from one place to the next. Would it be very relatively easy for somebody to learn how to fly this?
Well, you know, that's interesting that you say that. We did a little survey last year, and we went back to about 2 or 3 years of our sales, and we found out that 39% of the airplanes that we sell are to people that aren't even pilots yet, and they learn to fly on their own airplane. So almost 40% of our sales are to folks that are, they need to travel, they're tired of the airlines, and after, of course, COVID, people don't even want to get on an airline anymore. They don't want to get in that petri dish of an airliner, and they would rather fly themselves. And an airplane is much more efficient than an automobile. We can get to places much more quickly. There's over 5,000, almost 6,000 airports in the United States alone that we can fly into, as opposed to the airlines that only service maybe just a little
Did you fly in here?
We did. We flew into Tulare Airport, and we've been doing that for the last 12 years or so, and we love being here at World Ag.
Did you taxi over to the fairgrounds?
We did have to do that 1 year. This particular airplane that we have on display is an actual airplane that we actually we decontented it. There's no engine in it. The wings are designed to come apart, unlike the real airplane that flies, so that we can bring it to events where we can't get a real aircraft into.
And well, thank you very much.
Okay, my pleasure.
And what could be more fun than an airplane? I don't know.
Either. Yeah, I'm Mel Machado. I'm the Vice President of Member Relations for Blue Diamond Growers.
Who's a member of Blue Diamond Growers?
Blue Diamond Growers consists of about 3,000 almond farmers here in California, covering the entire Central Valley.
Now, I asked you this before, but I have to ask again. How do you keep 3,000 independent farmers together?
Well, they are independent farmers, are primarily family farming operations. And how do you keep them together? Is with a common purpose. Our mission literally is to maximize the return or the payment that for the almonds that the growers entrust us with their crops.
Good. How do you maximize?
We have a wide range of value-added products. Most people know us from the 6-ounce cans of almonds, but we do everything from snack almonds to flour to protein to beverage to almond butter, a wide range of products that are used directly by the consumer, but also used as ingredients in products by other food companies as well.
Immensely popular now throughout Asia, I understand.
Actually, around the world. We sell to over 90 different countries.
Do you grow enough for them to sell? That's a lot of people.
Yeah, there's actually plenty of almonds right now. Almonds acreage has grown, as most people know, and there's plenty of almonds to go around, and we're looking to grow the market even more.
Now, what does an almond offer a hungry person?
An almond is I use this quite a bit these days. It is a highly portable, highly non-perishable source of protein. We live in a health halo. We have a qualified health claim for heart disease or heart health. There's a lot of studies that show that consumption of almonds can actually help the skin.
And so people driving back and forth to work, they're hungry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good stuff. Again, it's portable. And I run into people all the time that some of them have literally fished some almonds out of their pocket. But, you know, we have the can, we have the foil pouches, and it's very easy to transport with you and a very healthy snack that is easy to get your hands on.
No need to go hungry.
No need to go hungry at all if you have almonds. And they're actually good.
Well, there you go, folks. No need to go hungry when you're walking through the Ag Expo at the World Ag Expo in Tulare, because there's a lot to eat and a lot about the food we eat. I guess my big lesson has been the tremendous amount of money that goes into our industrial production agriculture. Holy smokes, a lot of money. Got to know how to farm with money to succeed in today's agriculture. Invite you to stay tuned for the next hour, in which we'll take on the water wars of California and have a discussion about who should get the water, because everybody wants it. And water is life. And without water, we're on the dark side of the moon. So stay tuned. I'm so happy to have had you with me today, and look forward to the next hour of talking about water with you. This has been The Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Please remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain. Agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. Thank you for tuning in.